Martin Schwenke from IBM, also Samba team, will be talking about scaling address handling in CTDB.
Hi, this is my first Samba XP. Please be gentle. So how did the talk come about? Amitai and I gave a pretty good talk at LinuxConf AU, the Australian Linux conference, about a bunch of bugs that we worked our way through in CTDB. And, you know, it was kind of an interesting hacker's tale. So when I thought, what can I talk about at Samba XP? Well, I haven't done anything interesting with vacuuming. Let's do some sort of hacker's tale about trying to fix something fairly specific and finding out some interesting things. So, CTDB public IP addresses. There's a bunch of ways of doing load balancing and high availability. CTDB uses a pool of IP addresses, and it does this to provide what we can call weak load balancing. There's no actual checks of what the load on each node is like. It's just round robin DNS. So it's pretty weak. If a node becomes unhealthy, then we redistribute the IPs that it's hosting to other nodes. So we've got the concepts of healthy, unhealthy, and redistributing IPs. And when we do that, there are a bunch of steps. First, we do the calculations to figure out which IP addresses should be on which node, and there are a few algorithms in CTDB to do that. Once we've worked out where the IP addresses should be, we send a release IP control to each node that should not be hosting each particular IP address. So if we have the simplest case, we have, say, four nodes in our cluster, we have four IP addresses, and if we move one of those addresses to another node, then we send a release IP for that address to three nodes. So there's redundancy, and that also tells the nodes that have nothing to do with that IP address at the moment where the IP address is, so they can report status of the location of IP addresses. Then each node that should be hosting a particular IP address gets a take IP. And then there's an IP reallocated event, which is kind of badly named. It could be called reconfigure. Basically what it does, there's only one of them per node for each IP reallocation, and it basically says to reconfigure services on the node because things have changed. And I want to note that there are alternative approaches to doing this, and, you know, instead of doing something really, really different here, I just wanted to make this work better. So these take IP and release IP events are handled in scripts in CTDB, which means they need to be forked and all of that sort of thing. These scripts contain release IP events, take IP events, and there's also an update IP, which I won't talk about. It's kind of a combination between the two. Taking an IP is pretty simple, just to show you that it really is a regular script, and many scripts can implement the take IP event because they might want to do something different. They might want to change something for a service. And the beauty of all this is that 15 scripts are enabled by default in CTDB. So if you want to, if you're taking an IP on a node, you end up running 15 scripts at least. And some of them will do nothing. So that's a bit suboptimal. So then we end up with a problem. The take IP and release IP events, they each run in parallel. So if you're going to release two IP addresses from one node, you're going to run two scripts in parallel. If you're going to release 10 addresses, you'll run 10 scripts in parallel, and so on. And some users have a lot of public IP addresses. Why would they do that? Well, some have tens or even hundreds. Well, If they've got a lot of nodes, they want to do fine-grained balancing. It's a bit weird. The balancing is weak because it's just round-robin DNS, but they still feel they want to do fine-grained balancing so that if they've got four nodes, some people like to have 12 IP addresses. So that if you've got four nodes active, you have three per node, three nodes active, four per node, two nodes active, six per node, and you get exact balancing. So some people like to do the multiplication, work out how many IP addresses they need, and have a lot. And there are also some customers who have a lot of networks or VLANs, and they want addresses on each of those. And when a node becomes unhealthy, they want to fail those over to potentially different nodes. So, when a lot of take IP and release IP events run at once, you can get a high load, it can take a long time. IP failover can time out. There's an internal timeout that's set by default to 9 seconds. You send out your 100 or 200 release IPs, and if they don't come back after 9 seconds, you decide there's a problem. When things time out repeatedly, nodes can become banned, and that's a problem. You don't want that to happen if you can avoid it. So Amitai and I sat down over lunch and tried to figure out how we can improve this. So the first approach would be to batch take IP and release IP. You add a configuration tunable so that when you send take IP or release IP controls to a node, it doesn't do anything. It just queues them. And part of this is that you end up kind of backwards compatible because you still have the same controls and you don't need to send large amounts of data in each control. Then when you've sent them all and they've come back and said, yep, received, you then do a single take IP batch and it would process all the take IPs that have been queued. So that's one way of doing it. And then you would add new events for the event scripts, and you would have to implement the handling of those in any of the event scripts that currently handle take IP and release IP. And that's a lot of work. And the project we work on also loves backward compatibility. They love the idea of being able to upgrade half of a cluster to a new version and not have any protocol mismatches. So introducing a new control is a pretty big step here. So the other thing that you can do is you could minimize the work that's done in these events. So the first thing you can do, which I'll describe in more detail in a sec, is to just generally make it more efficient to run event scripts. So when we fork off an event script, do it better, especially when we're under load. The next step would be to allow the IP reallocated event to do all the hard work. For example, we've got some policy routing code, and at the moment, a lot of the work is done in take IP and release IP. So when you're forking 100 copies of that particular event script to handle the policy routing, it runs for quite a while, and you get that load, you know, going on for 5, 10, 15 seconds. And that could be bad. The next thing you can do is you could force the hard work into IP reallocated. So when force services to reconfigure themselves in IP reallocated and don't support that anymore in take IP and release IP. Then you would find and fix any bugs, annoyances, and bottlenecks, and then life would be perfect. And the good thing is, if you do all of this and you decide it's not enough and performance still sucks, you can do solution one, where you batch the controls, and you will already have done some of the hard work by doing solution two. So, how do we make running event scripts more efficient? Well, it's kind of almost paradoxical because, you know, as we found in CTDB, well, my test results here that I did somewhat lazily without the cluster being under load which I might get to showing you if we have time, don't show any improvement for this. We actually lose performance because we change from fork to vfork and exec, and the exec costs us. But we do know that when you've got a real loaded cluster and the CTDB processes are big because you've got big memory map databases, then you do win by doing vfork and exec instead of forking that those great big processes and copying the page tables. So there's no real surprise there. So that is now in the CTDB 2.5 branch, and it helps underload when the processes are big. Okay, is that a bit of an eye test or is it readable? It's okay. So the next thing you can do is tweak the IP reallocated event so that it knows about individual IP address changes. And that's actually pretty easy. The take IP and release IP in the 10. Interface event script just drops everything it's doing into a file, and then the IP reallocated event reads that file, and you wrap all of that in some functions to make it look nice and friendly, and nobody gets too scared. Then you move all of the processing that you can, which sadly doesn't end up being all of the processing, which I'll explain, you move that into the reconfigure event so that when you change some IP addresses, you need to tell Windbind some things. The NFS Ganesha needs to be told some things by creating some crazy touch files. The tricky one is policy routing, because of the way Linux does primary and secondary IP addresses, if you end up dropping the primary address, you'll also drop all of your routes. And that means even if you do, when you're taking IP addresses, even if you do add the corresponding routes for those IP addresses, if you've done a recent release IP, you might have lost a whole bunch. So in IP reallocated, you still need to make sure that you have all the routes you need. So there's a whole lot of overkill going on here, and it's horrible. There's a couple of little bonuses, little simplifications. At the moment, in the CTDB scripts, each service says, oh, I got a take IP event or a release IP event. That means I should flag that I have to do a reconfiguration when the IP reallocated event comes. Well, if this magic file exists that has been created by the 10.interface event script that contains all the changes, if that file exists, then IP reallocated on a node knows that it has to do the thing. So we no longer have to do this per service. These changes aren't upstream yet. I'm still sitting on them because I'm scared. The failure case here isn't quite as pretty as the current failure case because you could actually reconfigure a service that you completely reconfigured last time. Anyway, and there's a little optimization that you can do for GPFS for the Ganesha script to make sure that you don't keep running a command again and again and again. Now, you can also force the IP reallocated event to do the work for you by just saying that only scripts that live in a brand new ipevents.d script directory will be run by take IP and release IP. All of the other scripts will no longer be run by take IP and release IP. And instead of running 15 scripts for each event, that means if you are running a take IP or a release IP event, you'll only run one script because there's only going to be one script in the ipevents.d directory for starters. So that's nice and simple, and it lightens the load. We just don't run unnecessary things that aren't going to do anything for us. So then we do this and things start getting a bit faster. We improve the performance to the point where we end up with a whole lot of things running at once, and we start to notice the bugs because we're putting a bit of pressure on the system. So I'm sitting there watching my tests go on as I'm applying these script patches, and I sit there and I think, well, there are these invalid request IDs in replies. Why doesn't CTBD know about these request IDs? Well, some guy out there reworked the CTDB reload IPs command to make it send the release IP and take IP controls asynchronously to make it more efficient. But they forgot to register the state so the replies could be waited for. So the child process finishes and exits and goes away before the replies come in. And things don't behave the way we expect. And, you know, I'm not sure who would make such a simple mistake, but it was that guy. And it's always embarrassing. So then the same guy should go and fix his mistake. So that's good. One fix. So then we run a bunch of... We run the same test again. And we notice a bit more weirdness. And this is a bit cryptic. But, you know, we've just deleted 200 IP addresses, and then the re-enabling takeover runs message tells us that we've finished moving the IP addresses around. It should be all done by now. And then we start getting messages from the script saying, oh, we're putting some of those secondary IP addresses back, so we can tell the processing and the deleting of the IPs is still actually going on. And why should that be? We just fixed the problem where they were happening asynchronously and we weren't waiting for them. Well, it turns out that delete IP in CTDB has always been like this. Each delete IP control invokes a release IP event asynchronously. It doesn't wait. So when I rewrote CTDB reload IPs to get it to reload the IP addresses file, I wanted everything to be nice and synchronous so that you know exactly what state you're in when it finishes. You update the file, you do CTDB reload IPs, you get addresses deleted from nodes, added to nodes, and when it finishes, you know you're done. So the person who calls this always knows when they're done. So that was a little unexpected. So we decide to make delete IP wait until an IP address is released. And this involved adding a bit of code and was really quite ugly. But I decided the best way of doing it was to not actually delete the address, but just mark it as deleted. And then call the release. And when the release comes back, it says, oh, this one is marked as to be deleted. And then it actually deletes it. So that way you only have to wait for one thing to complete. So it was kind of a neat idea. And then there was a little patch on top of that where we could optimize some behavior that depended on that. And then there was some stupid programming in that got fixed, which is nice. Okay, so then you get to the problem that delete IP doesn't fit the model that I had in mind when rewriting the reload IPs command. The idea was going to be that you would do all of the deletions and adds, and you would make sure that any takeover runs or IP reallocations were disabled while you were doing that. Then you would enable the IP reallocations. All the IP reallocations would just happen at once, and then you're done, and you've got a nice, clean logic flow. So we disable, CTDB reload IPs disables the IP allocation runs, figures out which IP addresses aren't needed, says go and delete it, then it figures out which ones to add, causes them to be added but not assigned to any nodes, not actually hosted, then we wait, we enable the IP allocation run, trigger a run, and everything should then be done at the end. So I said that twice. Cool. However, delete IP now waits for IP addresses to be released, so all the work is actually done there. So all the work for deleting IPs is done in step 2, when I think it should be done in step 6. So this one isn't upstream yet, I don't think. It fundamentally changes the, you know, people used to use CTDB, Dell IP and add IP to add and delete individual IPs, and that's still good for debugging, but it's really hard to reason about doing those things individually, which is why reload IPs is good. It's almost like a transaction. So in making reload IPs behave nice and cleanly, it does change the behavior of CTDB Dell IP, but I think it's something we can live in, and I think I could push this patch up sometime soon. So the nice thing is, when you delete an IP, that process doesn't actually do anything. It just flags it as deleted, and it means that next time a takeover run or IP reallocation happens, that IP address can't be hosted anywhere because it's flagged for deletion. So it'll be dropped from those, any IPs that you're deleting will be dropped from the nodes that are hosting them, and then in the callback, they'll actually get deleted from the internal CTDB structures. So it's a thing of beauty. Okay, so now things are starting to fly. You know, I'm adding and deleting 100, 200, I think I was doing 300 and 400 IP addresses, and we have a bit of a bottleneck. When CTDB is deleting one IP address, and if that IP address is the primary IP address on in a network, then it will recognize that fact, and this is all done in script, it'll recognize the fact that it's the primary, get a list of all the secondaries, remember them, drop the primary, which causes the primary and all the secondaries to be dropped, and then individually put back all the secondaries. And all of that is done under a lock, which means that you're doing quite a bit of work, and if you're going to delete 100 IPs, the worst case performance is order n factorial. Because if you always happen to delete the primary, it gets ugly. And in fact, I think the way my test was running, I think I was getting quite close to this, just for fun. So how do you avoid this? Okay, well, primary addresses and secondary addresses in Linux are done per network. So if you use /32 addresses for all of your IP addresses, nothing's a secondary, but then you lose broadcast. So that's probably not good. The next thing you can do is you can batch IP address releases and try to optimize them. So you say, am I going to delete the primary? You know, out of these 100 or 200 addresses, is one of them the primary? Yep, okay, just delete it. They're all gone. That's nice. If it's not the primary, then let's do something smart and try to figure out, you know, you could go as complicated as saying, well, we're dropping 10 out of the 100 addresses. That means we should drop those individually. But if we're going to drop 99 and actually leave the primary, then it would probably be quicker to drop the primary, dropping everything and put the primary back. Something crazy like that. Yep.
Question, what about preventing any of the public addresses to be a primary address by adding a static address?
A lovely idea. And in fact, that's what we did. That's what used to be done in IBM Soft's product, but in the IBM Sonos product, not anymore. Too many IP addresses used, you know, if you're going to have many nodes, wasteful. However, there's a very, very simple solution that nobody knew. I'd been out looking for this, you know, once a year. You echo one into the magic file, and the first secondary, and if you remove the primary, the first secondary address gets promoted. Lovely. And somebody blogged it. DuckDuckGo found it. Go DuckDuckGo. Go Google as well. And I went looking in the kernel documentation. It's undocumented. How long has it been there? It's been there nearly 10 years. This predates CTDB. We could have been doing this all along in CTDB, but we didn't. And what's more useful is that it's been there since 2.6.12, which means every distribution that any sane person is using has this. So the right thing to do instead of using an undocumented feature is to get yourself a kernel patch. Thank you. It's a three-line documentation patch, but it counts. And it also means we're now dealing with a documented API, and we know that Linus does not like changing user space behavior, and I suspect doesn't like changing it even more when it's documented. I don't think this is going to go away. The other thing about the original patch that's astonishing is that it defaults to off to preserve the existing behavior that I suspect nobody really wants. But, okay, it's nice to be backward compatible when you introduce a feature, and thank you to Harold for adding the feature. So then, make it so in CTDB. Instead of locking around adding and deleting IP addresses, just call IPADRA add, IPADRA del, and have things work nicely. It's not in the CTDB 2.5 branch, but it's in master. I keep on making embarrassing mistakes. It's always nice if you can discover your mistakes while testing, but I didn't. And now, the nice thing is, since you're never deleting that primary address and you're never losing all your routes for a network, you don't have to go chasing missing routes in the policy routing code anymore. So you only need to, in the IP reallocated event, you can process all the ads or all the take IPs and all the release IPs, and you know that the routes you've got there reflect or correspond to the IPs that you've got, which is really nice. So that's a nice little improvement. Do I need to dance to make up the rest of the time, or are we good? I can show some timings that I did, if anyone cares, but basically what they show is that the vfork and exec, because I wasn't testing under load, made things slightly worse, and then my patches made things slightly worse. And then when you do the bug fix and especially do the promote secondaries thing so you never have to re-add the secondary addresses and you get rid of the user space lock and just depend upon the lock in the kernel to lock around the IP address adds and deletes, you end up obviously better than where you started with. So we're adding 300 or 400 IP addresses and doing all the processing initially took something crazy like 2 minutes. It can now be done in of the order of 5 seconds for the addresses, and the policy routing stuff is still reasonably expensive, running in at about 7 or 8 seconds. So performance improvements were good, and we learned something along the way. We learned about the Linux promote secondaries feature. We learned that the code had some had some bugs that needed fixing. And we made things better. So, yeah, it was a fun series of hacks. So.
Thank you, Martin. A very optimistic end. Yes.
I just had a question about the promote secondaries sort of defaulting to it. Do you check the kernel version and emit a warning if you suspect it's not going to work, or do you check for failure on the write to slash /proc?
I think that at startup I check whether it exists, and I decided not to fall back because this has been there so long. I decided to just fail startup.
Yeah, I mean it's reasonable. How would someone detect it if they were running an old kernel? And
yeah. So we'll fail to startup if it doesn't exist. The other thing is that Instead of enabling it by default for all interfaces, I decided it is cheap enough to do it on an interface specific, to do it for the interface that you're adding or deleting an IP to. I think, I can't remember if I do it. All of these things are both, you can set it as a default, you can add it, you can set it for all in Linux, and you can also set it per interface. So I decided to avoid surprises for others.
Only the ones that CCDB is interested in.
Yeah, and because the address configuration can change at runtime, I decided not to do that at startup. I decided to do it every time because it's cheap. Because in the kernel, it just sets a variable. I don't think I'd get much of a speed up if I didn't do it every time. So, yeah, I mean, it could just be a case of if you want to run CTDB, make sure this is on for all interfaces. And
it's also avoiding races with crazy administrators.
Yep. Yep. It's, it's so not. I was just astonished when I saw that the feature existed. Anyone else, or did I just put everyone else to sleep? Well, it's nice to have a bit of a sleep before lunch or after lunch.
If there are no more questions, there are. Okay.
Any reason you don't use a Netlink interface or something like that, and instead go via scripts?
Instead of?
You go via scripts.
Yep.
Any reason you don't use direct Netlink interface or something? Libnl.
It was like that when I arrived. Probably, even though the IP route is Linux specific, I guess in some sense it's a little more portable to use scripts and a little easier to. Well, yeah, but you know, instead of having to dive into the C source code to make it support some other operating system, you can just add your own scripts. And you can do a bit of monkey see, monkey do instead of having to understand the deep technical stuff. So I do like the event script stuff. If we can make it scalable then like this, then I think we win. But yeah, the other thing is, of course, that, no, I won't guess when, but hopefully sometime we will end up with a CTDB public IP daemon, which does all of the public IP handling, and all of that functionality will come out of the main daemon, out of the recovery daemon. The IP daemon can do its own monitoring of sanity of the IP addresses, can handle the allocation, can handle the assignment with scripts, and basically the interface to that would be as simple as here are the states of the nodes, allocate IPs, and that way it's really easy to plug something else in. So if you want to throw in something that does use a Netlink socket to assign the IPs or whatever, or to manipulate them, then you could do that pretty easily. So that's some distance away, but hopefully we can make that happen because, yeah, it'd be nice to have that lean database daemon, nice lean IP daemon, event script daemon, just have a bunch of things that can be separated out and not run if you don't need them.
Yeah, actually the main reason why it is done in event scripts is that it's not performance critical. It's failover handling, so we are not really, yeah.
We're done.
Any more comments, questions?
Insults.
If not, thank you, Martin.